It's your weekly dose, Johnny. I've talked about that.
You got to have it. It's just like the vaccine. The vaccine, you're going to have two, right? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
You got to take two doses.
Well, of the Pfizer vaccine, yeah. We're like the other guys with one dose, non-refrigerated.
Yeah, there was a comedian that compared it to the rival vaccines that are probably going to be released to, like, when the two movies that are very similar come out. Like, you had
Tombstone and Wyatt Earp.
Wyatt Earp. You had Dante's Inferno and
Volcano.
And then you also had the end of the world when you had Armageddon and what was that one called?
Deep Space.
No, Deep Impact.
Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you had all that happen, and that's what the vaccines are going to be. It's going to be like a rival. You had two doses? Loser.
You mean you're not a zombie yet? Wow.
Yeah.
You must have taken the other one.
Oh, you're going to love being a zombie.
Yeah, I mean, not to alarm people, but, you know, this is the entire premise of I Am Legend.
A lot of movies, a lot of sci-fi movies had that. You had 28 Days Later, right, where a virus may turn people into things. But that wasn't the virus. It was you're saying that I Am Legend, it was the vaccine that did it to people.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Will Smith. You know, we're all
well, he
out.
Had the cure, though, right? His blood ended up being the...
Man, come on, Johnny. You know, I did preach a whole message of I Am Legend.
Of course, we all did.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody worth their salt found an allegory in that.
I didn't call it I Am Jesus or anything.
Like I am Omega.
But it really was perfect. Like, if he had the answer within his own blood, but he had to die to give it to you the whole time. Oh, my goodness. And, guys, that's our episode.
We have wrapped it up. That's your Thursday night camp right there.
Oh,
that's your,
yeah, man.
You save that one.
Listen, if I get asked to speak at a camp, I'm still going to do it.
You just, you're like, guys, do you remember a movie that came out about 15, 16 years ago?
Well, Jeffrey ripped me a bunch of, because I did, I don't know, it was probably 6 years ago, 5 years ago, but Jeffrey ripped me a bunch of scenes from it.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that helped.
That was back when everybody, of course, everybody still does the whole, like, God at the Movies series every summer.
We did a God at the Movies series one time. I don't think we've done it since.
But. Well, there's always, like, youth pastors, it's harder to... You want to relate. It's like all about being relevant. So, yeah, you'll be like, oh, there's a scene I love in Tommy Boy. How can we extrapolate a Jesus message from
it? I'm still quoting Dumb and Dumber so much, and I'm so dated, but it's still so funny
to
me.
Have we told the story of when our friend – well, we should have told that when Brian passed, but that was one of my favorite memories of working with Brian, our friend who was a youth pastor that we were both youth leaders underneath. He did a revival somewhere. And the day of, he goes, I'm doing this message about how when you don't have a vision, you're just going around in circles. We got to have, you know, whatever. So he goes, do you remember European Vacation? I go, yeah, I remember that movie. He goes, there's a scene where they just keep driving around and they get stuck in a roundabout. And the Chevy Chase character is going, look, kids, Big Ben, Parliament. And he can't merge.
Right.
So he's just like, kids, Big Ben, Parliament. And he gets more and more angry. And so rip that scene. So basically, this was back in the day when I had to go get like a AV cart. Yeah. I had like an AV cart and I like queued it up to that scene. And I didn't really, I just got it to where that scene started. And then the day of, I remember thinking, I need to watch this to make sure there's, because the European Vacation was like PG-13. I'm like, I wonder if there's, so I watched the scene. And he gets like halfway through, Big Ben, Parliament. And he's getting angrier and angrier. And then he goes like the fifth time and he goes, son of a. And he just begins he lets the expletives fly.
Wow.
So I told Brian, I was like, yeah, we're not going to.
Because it was an event we were playing at in the band. So we weren't at
preach.
Home. Like, well, yeah, we.
Right.
So he would have let expletives fly.
In the middle of the. And right. Not known. And he goes, so I went to him. I go, hey, you're not. I went ahead and I skimmed this scene and you're not going to. He goes, well, I assumed that you. Like, he was like, I assumed you were going to watch the thing. He was terrified to think that I didn't just watch it for.
Yeah.
Like, this was like, you know, half an hour before he was going to preach about it.
Yeah.
So I go, you're going to want to find another. Example.
I had that happen to me this year on something. I was trying to use a clip from something and I happened to watch it and it had stuff I didn't remember.
That just shows how desensitized you are to it, John.
Goodness.
You let it in and
right.
Then before you know it, Chevy Chase is cussing out your children. Which I think he would do in real life. I think he's a very surly person from what I've heard.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's not one of the good ones. One of the famous people that you're like, he's so humble. Like, I heard Chevy Chase is not.
Right, he's no Steve Martin.
He's not kind, no.
Yeah, so.
But which it's hurt him. That's the thing. Like, you always hear people like, how does he still get work? Well, Chevy Chase does not get work.
No.
It's because he's hard to work with.
Yeah. That's my excuse, too. That's why they.
They're jealous of you. They're jealous of all your success.
I'm very surly. Very surly. That's interesting. Sadie and I watch Christmas Vacation, of course, is about to come out
every
year. So we, Sadie and I have like some pretty big Christmas movie traditions. So we watch Elf.
Right.
We're already laughing just thinking about Elf. We talk about the car of the day.
Love it.
Looking forward to it. We watch Christmas Vacation, although I have to turn off a couple scenes.
What do you do? You skim them? What do you do? Do you
I just
skip?
Fast forward a little bit or, yeah, or I don't know. If I hit the guide button, then it covers it. You know what I'm saying? With the, you know, if so.
But that means you have to know, like, explicitly where it is.
I know. I mean, again, I've been watching this movie since I was a kid. Yeah. So.
But you don't trust her to be able to filter it out. But even though you watched it when you were a kid.
Right.
That's interesting.
Everything you're saying
right now.
You're
trying to protect her from, even though it didn't hurt you. I mean, are you inexplicably damaged? You're like irrevocably because you heard a curse word?
No. It's not the curse.
I get you don't want your children to grow up before it's their time or whatever. You're trying to protect them. There's a middle ground, right?
Most of
from
us is
building a bubble versus.
It's generally the sexual things that I'm trying. It's less about the profanity and more about the sexual things.
Yeah, it is interesting though, and again, I don't have children, but I do. I've seen arguments on both sides of this stuff, I remember watching Die Hard 2, where a plane crash happens. The terrorists kill like 240 people on screen. They just go up in a fireball.
Yeah.
And that was like a PG movie.
Yeah.
But if that movie had shown a nipple, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like it would have definitely been a hard R. It's just, I'm interested by that in our culture, that whole like what we decide is objectionable.
Yeah. Well, what's crazy is when you said that, I remember European Vacation has a nude scene.
Yeah.
And you're telling me it's PG-13.
I think it's PG-13.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I think back in the day when you had a PG-13, you could show...
That's nuts.
Partial nudity.
Because I think there's a topless scene in that. Which I remember when I was a kid going, that's not... This is supposed
somebody
to be...
You know, somebody's going to write and correct us and say it's R, but I really don't think so. I believe...
There's no way to know, by the way. There's no way we could find out.
By the time I look it up, we don't have like a producer that could look it up for us and we keep talking. So that's the reason we don't ever fact check. People always go, why don't you just fact check yourself in the moment? It's because people run their car into guardrails. It's so boring if we stop every minute and...
Yeah.
So we just go on saying incorrect things and just go with it.
Yeah.
It's our way.
There's no way to know.
This is the way. Are you watching Mandalorian?
I am.
Oh, it's so good.
It's very good. The spider stuff really freaked
me out. It creeped me out. I told her, I said, I'm definitely having night terrors tonight. Just so you know, it's happening.
Yeah.
Because I take melatonin now, too. And, you know, that gives me very vivid dreams. Mm. I don't have sleep paralysis. I don't have sleep night terrors anymore, but I have sleep paralysis. So I'll have like a bad dream, but I'm like...
You're stuck in it.
I'm stuck in it.
Yeah.
So I don't get up and like turn on the lights and think that there are rats in the room.
Yeah.
But I do have dreams there are rats in the room and I just let them crawl on me. I don't know which is...
so much more terrifying.
It is, right?
Yeah. Wow. That's horrible.
Yeah. I know a lot of people don't react to melatonin that same way, but I definitely do. Yeah. I'm taking 100 milligrams.
Are
is
you
that
sure
too many?
You're not dropping acid?
No, I'm taking it. It is for a lot of people. Some people's body chemistry reacts differently to it.
Uh-huh.
Like some people can't even take like 1 or 2 milligrams. I take 10.
Wow.
And some people think that's like you're overdosing. And then I know people that take 20.
Wow.
So it's...
We have some. I don't know what. I just take whatever.
Do you take it? Is it a gummy? What do you do?
No, it's a...
How are you dropping
it? It's a dissolvable.
Under your tongue? Yeah, I take a little dissolvable.
Yeah.
But I don't... I still chew it. I don't...
It's hard.
I don't understand why you have to let it dissolve. Does that matter?
I don't know.
Am I doing it wrong? Maybe that's why I'm hallucinating.
You should let it dissolve tonight and see what happens.
Okay.
So,
good experiment.
Yeah, I do have a couple of allergy nasal sprays, prescription, and I noticed one. I don't take it... I used to take Flonase as the steroid. And I tried to take this because I was waking up coughing again because that's my thing, you know. And I took the stronger
it's
steroid.
It's kind of my thing.
Oh, yeah, I've been doing it since college. I wake up coughing, you know. And I started having crazy dreams. And I realized, one, I woke Laura up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's bad because she has a sleeping disorder as it is. So don't wake her up. Like I usually, sometimes I'll need to get him go to the bathroom, but I'll know if I move and she's sleeping so peacefully, I'll just lay there, like just tortured.
Wow.
Trying to let her sleep another minute because you never know. Because it's very, very common for her to get 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and then so you're like, okay, don't move, you know.
I feel like you really love your wife and you're kind of terrified of her.
No, it's not that. It's that the next day then she does great. I had one night this year. That I only got 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
And I was an absolute just zombie the next day. And
I need more than that.
She can just function.
I can do 7 now, though.
Yeah.
I can do 6 or 7 and I'm okay.
But that's that. Yeah. That's
like, I don't nap at all. I realize that I've not taken a nap in like years.
Yeah. I haven't either. Well, on a Sunday occasionally. Listen, the best
like
nap.
You fall, yeah. You fall asleep at halftime. You wake up. Uh-huh. It's like middle of third quarter, late yep. fourth quarter. And you're like,
oh, it was gorgeous.
You didn't miss the end of the game.
No, it's everything you want it to be, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You just fell asleep. Because I get up early Sundays.
Yeah.
You know? And so, especially if I led worship.
Are you trying to say you're better than me? Because you got, I don't know about you.
Some of us go to church, Johnny. No, but, I woke her up one night. The next night, yeah. I found myself sitting up. It was very Johnny W-esque. And mm-hmm. I was throwing punches like this forward, but not towards her.
Right, but
and
you're punching something.
The next night, I stopped taking the nasal spray.
Okay.
So it's like, well, which is better, punching my wife or coughing? So I've chosen, I'm just, you know, it's a fine line, Johnny.
I don't know if I've ever punched anybody. You know, I've got a golf club leaned in the corner at my bed.
Oh, dear.
Because, you know, we don't have guns or anything.
Yeah.
But I never remember that it's there. And I'm like trusting myself to remember if I see something. There's a, and plus of all, I'm giving him a weapon too. Right. Like he's coming
ooh,
in.
Ooh, look, golf club.
Hey, look at this.
Like he forgot his weapon.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for this.
Yeah.
That used to be a Seinfeld bit where he would say like the door, the bar that goes down into the floor.
Uh-huh.
You know, remember those old locks yeah. where you'd see the bar that goes down into the floor? Like the, he goes, that's great because when somebody kicks in the door, they now have something to beat you with. So that's true. It's a good point. It's like a crowbar. But yeah, so I was, the idea that I'm going to wake up out of a dead sleep and remember, oh, I've got a driver in the corner to grab.
I do.
Plus, you need a lot of room to swing one of those.
I have many times heard something, and I'm surprised how fast I can have the gun in my hand and ready.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know. That makes me feel good and bad. But good yeah. that if I needed it. But
and it's loaded?
It's loaded, but it's not racked.
Okay.
Meaning I have
safety's
to,
on or whatever?
There's no
I
safety.
Know so little
there's
about,
no safety on my gun.
Oh, no.
I have multiple guns, but
I know so little about guns.
My main one, it's not... This is what they say. You're going to laugh at this. A lot of guns, they say, oh, your safety is your trigger. Meaning, well, you have double action, single action. So when you have it in double action, then, or maybe it was single action.
I think a lot of those people have accidentally killed people.
Yeah. It's a
safety.
You
got
to know
trigger.
How to use your gun. That's the point. Like, yeah. So you put it in double action. I mean, it's
the safety's
a,
between your ears. It's in your mind.
It's right here. I mean, it's a much harder pull through to get it to go. If you have it, I'm sorry, guys. I don't remember which one was single and double, but
we're going
to
get so many.
Oh my
emails.
Gosh. Someone's going to really freak out. You got a gun. You know, I know.
No, I'm just meaning like your gun knowledge is going to be called into question.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're like, you shouldn't own a gun. Guys. You come pride right now.
From my cold dead.
Yeah. We just turned into Scott Stapp. Or
Scott Stapp.
Stapp.
That's what the
guy... From my cold dead here.
And then he just commits a gun crime and he gets sent to my own prison. It's really sad to see.
Oh, man.
But no, it's... you look, hey, if I was saying this to somebody the other day. Like, I'm so glad there are people who, like... Like, I'm so Second Amendment, I'm on board. It's just, we talked about that on the podcast last week. That, like, you can be Second Amendment and also be, like, common sense gun laws.
Yeah.
You know, that we shouldn't, like, should people be able to buy a rocket launcher?
Right.
You know, probably not.
Yeah.
You know? Or, like, bullet, you know, armor piercing, where it's clearly just to kill cops.
Yeah.
Like, should that be out there? I don't know.
Yeah.
And the people always say, like, but what if the government comes after you? You got to be ready.
It's like, well,
Ruby Ridge or whatever. It's like, you know what? They do have rocket launchers.
Yeah.
You're not going to win a battle against our government. Have you seen our military? We spend billions every year to make it even bigger.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And again, I'm okay with the government having rocket launchers as long as
you got your pea shooter.
I don't know. You know, again, freedom is a funny thing, even biblically. Freedom is not often what we think of it as. Because the modern day, and I think even ancient, freedom is not the absence of boundaries. Like, that's not the definition biblically of freedom. In fact, you are free within God's ways when you allow yourself to have the boundaries, when you submit yourself to something,
right.
There is greater freedom within it.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have a little dog who's a little over a year old, and since we moved to this house, it's got a backyard with all kinds of, like, basically there's lots of open spaces around it, and he will just run. Like, if you lose him, I told you that day one time. I mean, I had literally ran like 2 miles and I had to lay out and dive to grab him. Like, he won't let you catch him. He thinks it's just a game, you know?
Right.
So I had the fence around there. The fence is granting him more freedom. Like, because when he's outside, I'm not worried about it as long as he's inside the fence.
Yeah.
And there was a rabbit, by the way, last night I took him out, and there was a rabbit somehow inside the fence.
Oh, yeah, my dogs have done that. I've never seen my dogs run so fast than when a rabbit was in our fence.
He was in heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, he was full. I mean, of course, he's only like 12-pound dog, mm-hmm. but he thinks right then he's a wolf. Like, he is absolutely, and I feel bad for the rabbit, because the rabbit couldn't get out, but he finally found somewhere to get out, because the dog didn't catch it. I don't know what he would do. So, but in that moment, though, he's free, though. You know, he's free because he has the boundaries. So I think the founders, even if you take that politically, there's never like
right.
open. There's no such thing as living with people and having 100% freedom.
Like,
for
autonomy
anything.
To do whatever you want. Yeah. Yeah. Well, even a libertarian would say you're free until it impinges on someone else's liberty. You know what I'm saying? And which that's then they get into the interpretations of that.
Yeah.
So like people who are anti-mask would be like, well, this is my freedom to do whatever I want, but then they would say, yeah, but no, but you have the potential to make me ill,
right?
So now you're impinging on my liberty, so wear the mask. So it can be interpreted in many different ways.
Well, we have seatbelt laws.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people think those are bad too, but I don't know.
We have smoking laws.
Right, we have secondhand smoke.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a great, you know, I guess, comp to it, you know. I can't, even though I have freedom to do this to myself.
Have you ever been in an airport that had like a smoking lounge? I think there's one in Atlanta airport.
I've seen them like outside, like a
no,
fenced
no. There's
off.
One where it is a sliding door, windows within the terminal. So you can see just people just somehow. It's like you can watch them get cancer. Like, it's so, the elevated levels of smoke in that room, because it's all trapped in there. It's like a, you know, 20 square foot box. And you're just watching them like, what are you doing? Like, I have vices, but like, I've never been so addicted to something that's like, I'm going to go sit with these people and do this thing, knowing like people are watching me like it's a sport. There was a meme today, and it was ESPN posted. It said, does anybody have something you do that's not a sport but feels like a sport? And people started putting ideas, and I put one out, and it was like trying to carry in all the groceries in one trip.
Yes.
That was mine. That definitely feels like a sport, because it feels like you're getting points somehow. Of course, Facebook, we've talked about, I feel like that's a sport. That's why guys are so into it, because Facebook feels very feminine when you boil it down, because it's kind of, there's an exhibitionism to it, and there's a showing pictures of your kids. There's a lot of that. And there's like, you know, culturally, you know what I'm saying? It just feels more, but then you go, well, it's masculine because we found a way to add points. So now guys are like, I'm all in.
Yeah.
Look how many hearts I got. And, but yeah, I think Facebook is definitely already. So just the fact that they would post on social media and like, what feels like a sport, but isn't a sport, like social media 100%. But what do you think? Chasing your dog down. That's one.
You're going to laugh. What, even when I was a kid, weed eating was like a sport to me.
Oh, sure, because you can see where you've done it, where you've not. There's a finish line. Yeah. You're doing it for time.
And there's other guys in the crew that I'm faster and better than. And I had skill. Like, you know, I can. There was a time in life, Johnny.
So you heard the Rocky theme in your head when you're doing this.
That if I was so good with a weed eater that I could take a petal off of a flower without cutting down the flower. Like, yeah. So when you go around little trees and stuff, I can get the grass that's touching that's touching the tree without hurting the tree.
Yeah.
Like, I had all these techniques and stuff, because I did it for, guys, I mean, 20 years of my life or more.
You know what's up.
I weeded it like crazy, you know. And so I remember thinking when I was a kid, especially, you know, like all the athletes and stuff, like I can't compete with them. But man, if we could just strap on a weed eater.
Right.
You know, on field day.
Now they're in your world.
It's like, come at me. And it's such a weird... That's a weird fantasy.
I don't know that people would watch that sport at all.
I mean, you know, they watch the tree cutting sports, you know, with the chainsaws and
that
stuff.
That feels like, I guess, but that feels
more masculine. It does,
doesn't it, though?
Yeah. Everything that other people
do. Yours is like it's like a microcosm version, though, because you're cutting down grass. They're cutting down trees.
Well, see, my whole thing is
like an axe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could write my name on the side of a hill with a weed eater. In the grass, obviously.
I've written my name in the snow, but that's different.
That's totally different. I've waited in the rain. That's a whole, you know, you could do it.
Dude, you're like the postal service. So, yeah. Rain, snow, sleet.
You know, my dad basically got struck by lightning one time.
No way.
We were weed eating. We were doing, it was the last complex of the day. It's called Wendland. And it was our, it was only like 10 buildings. It's our smallest one. If you get to Wendland, like, it, you're home free.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've worked all day. Because some of our places had, you know, 40 apartments and huge ditches. And Wendland's like the last of the day is the easiest one. And so it was starting to rain. We're like, oh, we're just going to finish because we're not driving back out here tomorrow. And I remember I was weeding this curb, which, again, means I have a big metal rod in my hand.
Right. It's not safe.
And I heard this just thunderclap, you know, because I right now, I'm so attuned to lightning and thunder that the moment I see lightning, I immediately always start counting out loud to want to know how far away it is. Because I learned that being outside, you got to take cover or whatever. And so it just came, like no warning, just this huge, and I knew it was right over us. I guess my dad was on a lawnmower. And he happened to be right below a branch, and it hit the branch and basically showered the electricity on him and the, I think it knocked him off the mower.
Wow.
And like, he was shocked and everything. And it, he got this dad.
He just gets back up and keeps
my lightning, got up and kept going, you know?
Yeah.
My mom always joked that he kissed better after that. She always like, we'd always go gross, you know, but she's always, it's just, she'll still say to this day, you know, I tell you that, I always said after that, your dad had, he just kissed a little better after that. He got struck by lightning, but it was pretty dangerous. Like he, you know, but, yeah, man, dude, there's a whole world, you know, I put a GoPro. I watched it the other day. Jeffrey gave me a GoPro. Dad,
don't tell me you put it on your weed eater.
I did.
Oh my!
Because
Lord.
I realized, and Dad used to always tell me this.
That's the most dad thing I've ever heard of.
Well, it was because, and people have to understand, it was a family business. So from age, Dad did it for 40 something years, and it was the last cut. So he was retiring from it, and we realized we had so little, like. Today you take your phone, but we had like no photos.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We've been doing this since like I was 11 and, you know, Dad did it since before I was born, you know, and we have this, our whole lives, we don't have the main thing, a lot of photographic or video evidence. And so, and we were never going to go back out and do it again. This was kind of like the ending of literally. Yeah,
ending of an era.
Yeah. So I took out and took some pictures of the truck and Dad, and I saw him the other day. And then I put a, I was like, you know, like I can still remember where all the trees and the culverts are and all these things and the curbs. And so, yeah, I went out there and put a GoPro on to just have some memory of it that I would, you know, see it in the future. Isn't that, isn't that crazy? Yeah, so it's not a sport, but it's this weird part of my life that's like, I don't know.
I can see it. I mean, I think a lot of guys take mowing very seriously anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like my neighbor in right across the street from me is always mowing. And he has the most immaculate yard.
Yeah.
And I keep mine up just enough to not get letters on my door. I'm that guy. I'm like the very other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. I'm the guy that was kind of upset that we had such a wet summer because usually my grass dies by like mid-August.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I mean, it rained the whole summer. And so my yard has been lush and I'm tired of mowing because I've mowed my whole lot. I don't want to mow anymore.
Right.
I enjoy it. When I go do it, but I just don't want the, when I'm riding, especially, it's like, I don't want to take that.
I just can't do it. I don't know. I hired Seth's company to do it it's worth it to me. Just don't, I have like two pair of green shoes in my garage and
yeah,
I don't know. And I travel so much too. That's part of it, I guess. It's one other thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm justifying because I'm lazy. I don't want to mow my own grass. But.
You know, we've been in a pandemic and you're still paying somebody to.
It's true.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Man.
Wow.
And I've not been working either, so. But I found money to do that because I still don't want to mow my yard.
Yeah. So I'm just you had to go buy a lawnmower then.
Yeah.
It was a smart move. There you go.
I don't know.
No, it wasn't.
I'm not very smart. I'm not going to pretend.
Oh, yeah.
But we were talking last night about should we get a person in the spring to come, like hire somebody to come do like the deep clean of the house.
Uh-huh.
So we've never had that done.
Huh?
Like we clean the house, but then there's somebody that come in and like do all the everything.
The baseboards, the baseboards and all the fans. And
Yeah. And I was like, God, what a spoiled, like the idea of a person coming in to do that is such a, it's a very privileged thing, but we're probably going to do it. So if you're out there and that's what you do.
Oh man. Well, no, you know, I think that people, someone from the outside sees your house differently than you do, you know?
Yeah.
So they'll get things. You know, I'm always fascinated by reading ancient, you know, even biblical literature, like servants of some sort or people who provided services, that was a part of life for everyone. I'm not talking about slavery, obviously, like that, but if you look, you know, that was the way.
Even the world needs ditch diggers, John.
In the Roman times, even your
there's honor.
Doctors and your teachers were generally private.
Yeah,
you know, and so they might live with the family, you know, and you just, you know, I don't know. I see people with a lot of kids, especially, and I go,
throughout
history, either the community would have been a part of that.
Yeah,
you know,
it takes a village, John.
Well, there you go, and you know, it also. Even though the moms probably didn't have jobs, you know, in ancient times, they still would need help. Like, it's a big job. Yeah. So, anyway, that's a...
But having said that, do you want a bunch of people helping you raise your kids?
Guys, like, I'm putting out an all-points bulletin. I'm looking for some help for our one daughter.
Yeah, so. She's a handful. She's too much.
I tell you, man, having her home 3 days a week doing school is... She's been doing it like a champ. Laura gets up every morning an hour before Sadie and on those days. And I mean, my wife is just, my gosh, I mean, she's just like a, I don't know. She's,
well, she gets up cause she's already woken up by you coughing.
Well, probably. Yeah. So I
may as well get up.
I lay here as long as
get
I can
get ready for this school day.
But she takes all the assignments cause it's not just like easy to see. Like, she puts them all into one list because the programs they're using with Wilson County are not, they're not the best. So it's like, oh, you got this thing and this, and it's all different passwords, whatever.
You're impugning the school system of our county. You're cool with going on the air with that.
I am beginning my run for public office.
Okay, so we got to talk about this because you said you did a trip to Anna Maria Island and that they have a position there for mosquito management.
Mosquito control. It's an elected position. Well,
that's what I meant by management. I didn't mean like he was actually managing the mosquitoes. Everybody, is everybody in here? All right, let's start this Zoom meeting. Zoom. Okay, no, it's stupid. He's
Zoom.
Not managing. Oh, okay. But yeah, so he's controlling. That's that's how big of an issue it is there.
Yeah.
That you've got an elected position.
I wonder if the guy has to have some special, I would think you'd want to hire someone who knows about mosquitoes.
I'm just trying to think of like the slogans, like Bob Lard, you know, Bob Watson for mosquito control. I've got the big net. Like, what is his, how do you prove you're better than the other guy?
I use chemicals that won't put you in the hospital. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Wait till you see my barrel of poison. .com. I don't know.
I don't know. And there was only one sign that I saw throughout
the
town.
Then you have somebody that's like pro-mosquito for some reason. You're like, this guy's a kook.
Let the mosquitoes live.
Yeah, what are we doing? What are they hurting, really?
Yeah, it was a very strange... I don't know. I want to know if he won. I want to know, you know. And how did his life change? Did he have an acceptance speech? You know what I'm saying?
That's true. And what... I wonder what something like that pays.
I don't know.
Or do you just pay it because, like, it's good because for your business? Maybe he runs a business on the side where he benefits from, or is that a conflict of interest?
If it's an elected position,
or if you have an elected position, then you can't monetize it by being like the pest control dude.
I don't know.
That's weird.
Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe what you're voting on is the contract. Like, you're voting on who's going to get the contract with the whole island, so that everyone's not competing all the time. They're sick and tired of people walking up to their door going, ma'am, you want me to spray your yard? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just going to hire one guy, and you're all going to vote on who it is. Man, that's what it is.
Huh.
Ma'am, are you?
Yeah, I don't know. Who told you? Who sent you here? The mosquitoes? Get out of here.
It's kind of like when a tornado comes anywhere near town, people start knocking on your door, roofers, you have roofing companies, you know, so.
And you never even know if they live in your city, they're just like
crazy.
Oh,
yeah, often, yeah. So it's like, although I did get a new roof one time because of a couple
from like a fly-by-night roofer? One of those guys?
No, actually it was a mutual friend of ours. So,
okay.
But the insurance company paid for it at this point.
That's nice.
So, yeah.
I think that same friend did my roof.
Yeah.
How do you like that?
It's crazy.
We're not going to, he's not a sponsor, so we're not.
If you would like to be a sponsor.
That's right. That's the only way.
Say your name. So, but.
There's a lot of hurricane activity in Anna Maria, too. So maybe they have like a shingle coordinator. Maybe that's another elected, you know, who knows? A roofing moderator. I don't know what happens.
I gained 8 pounds.
That's like a tenth of your body weight.
I gained 8 pounds.
That's a lot. And you're not a big person.
So
I don't see it. That's the thing is, like, I don't ever see it when you go, I'm huge. You never look huge.
I am grabbing my fat roll as we speak right now.
But you're behind a desk.
You can't
see
tell.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. The deal is that I'd already gained some weight and then I had taken it back off. Mm-hmm. I was down to my, I have a 10 pound range I try to stay in. And I was at the top of
between what? 230, 240. Where are you at? No.
I don't mind saying, I try to stay between 165 and 175. Like 175, right. If I get to 175, like, okay.
Red alert.
Yeah, I need to. So 170, like
I can't even imagine what I would look like at 175.
So
I would just
be
a bag of bones, I think.
You're a lot taller.
No, but if you look at like the BMI chart,
yeah,
like I'm still overweight, technically overweight. I'm not obese anymore, but I'm overweight until I get to like 204. Like what? 204 is the high end of normal for my height at 6'4".
No.
Yes, on BMI. So if you go by height, weight, like I'm still overweight at 217 now.
But that can't be. See, here's the thing.
That's how it works.
Laura always quotes that stuff.
Football, think about football players. Like Derrick Henry is obese.
Yeah.
Like I hate those charts. They're such a lie.
I don't think they're. Listen, and Laura always quotes.
It's a guy. It's just one factor. It's whatever. But
she's always quotes. I'm like, honey, you're not like according to something. I'm.
Oh no, that's
like,
dumb.
No, that's dumb. You know. I'm sorry. I challenge the medical community.
Thank you.
On this podcast and prove me wrong. So
okay,
you can't trust science. Anyway.
but yeah, it's good to have a range. It's good. So there's factors. There's things you go. Okay, well, I'm gonna. Yes, I want to know the BMI. I want to know it, but also like you can't let that be a controlling. Like I'm 1 pound away from being okay with myself.
Yeah.
And if I look at that number and I don't like that number, I'm going to feel bad about myself all day. Like I'm beyond that now.
Yeah, I am too. Like, look, it's a range for health. Like it's a range to try, you know, same thing. Like I used to run, I used to turn my, GPS tracking run tracker off whenever I finished running. Cause mm-hmm. I walk another couple miles usually.
Right.
And then I'm like, why? Because it was messing up my time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, or I would stop the run and start a new one that I knew was my walking time.
I do that.
Time.
I do that.
But
so
now I'm like, what's
I'm
the
very
point?
Insecure.
I know
in your heart of hearts what
yeah,
you
Yeah, it
really
doesn't
did.
Matter. So when I get home and now it says, because I walked 2 more miles. That
right,
I
actually, hurt your average.
That the 5 miles was actually 13 minutes or whatever was my average. I just like, I don't
That's
care.
That's still pretty good, John.
I don't care anymore. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's fine. Like, who's seeing it? I don't share it. Who's seeing it? But the point of this is, Johnny, I had worked my way back down to 175. Okay. I was at 170, still the top of my range. I'm like, okay, I've done pretty good. And I went on a trip and Johnny, I ate.
What are you 5'10"? What are you?
I am 5'9".
5'9". Okay.
Ish somewhere.
I'm going to pull up the BMI and just see where we're at here.
When I got back from that trip.
Yeah.
Johnny, 183. I went from 175.
What kind of things were you eating? Give me an example.
What kind
how
of
do
thing,
you how do you gain 8 pounds?
I think a better question would be quick. What kind of things were I not eating?
Weren't I?
Or wasn't, was I? Was I don't know how to conjugate this.
It's fine.
So, but dude, I ate everything, and they have in Anna Maria, they have what's called donut experiment. I took the experiment very like I experimented with donuts of all. Kinds.
A lot of people, some people experiment with drugs,
right?
Like in college.
It was
you
like a drug.
Waited to your 40s to experiment with donuts.
Let me tell you something.
It's a journey.
And we have like memories with that place because we took Sadie when she was little. So it was like a return. But anyway, when I returned and now I'm running, I've already run 3 times this week. I've had no desserts and I'm back at low carb and I have lost 1.5 pounds. Like I can't normally have like what we call a whoosh. Like at first, I dropped 3 or 4. Nope. My body's like, you know what? You've gone too far and this is where we're going to stay now for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to make me work for every one of them.
Well, so. And you're 40 now, right? You're 41.
One.
So yeah, it's just tougher.
About to turn 42.
It's tougher, man.
I can't listen. I'm not
46, John.
Wow.
So
you don't look a day over 45 though.
Thank you.
So, you're looking up my BMI right now.
I am,
you're trying to see.
Up.
I'm morbidly obese.
Well, I just want to see what your high and your 175 because you're saying that's your threshold. So that BMI
here we go
is 25.8, which I want to say 25 is overweight. Yeah, 25 to 25, 29.9 is overweight. So you technically need to get down to
170. I bet
to 170 to be in your normal. I bet you. Yeah. No, 25.1. So you're technically at 25.1 BMI, even at 170. So you need to be like 169 probably.
That's about, look, 167 is like perfect for me or 168.
Yeah.
165 is just.
But again, we've already said that we don't believe in the BMI.
Correct.
So now you're letting it.
But no, what's interesting.
Don't let it in your head, John.
What's interesting is that's when I feel right. Like 165 is John doing insanity or John
yeah.
working out religiously. eating everything right. My body will not go below 165.
I work out religiously now. Like, didn't you say that the latest Barna results were that people who say they're regular attenders at church, it's one out of four?
One out of every three. So I work out religiously.
I attend one of every four workouts.
That's about right. So, I don't know. Laura read a good thing this week that someone said, hey, pick three. There's a whole movement.
Like at Panera, you get a soup bowl. You get a
put the soup in the bread.
It's a different
in a bread bowl.
Ugh.
But it's like, you know, listen, you're not going to be able to work 40-hour week job, clean the house completely, work out, get 8 hours of sleep, eat right. You're not going to be able to do all seven things that you want to do every day.
Yeah.
So give yourself a break and pick three for today.
I like it.
And I kind of
that's her book. That's going to be Laura's book.
I think it already is a book. She was somebody else. Yeah. But that's I kind of live that way.
Like, her book is about plagiarism.
It's really hard on writing. I wrote a book on plagiarism. No, I'm kind of a, like, especially with writing, and I think it does almost take like prayer for me to get there, but I'll sense this whisper like, hey, you're not going to hit 1,500 words today, and you stop beating yourself up over it. Like, the day is just hijacked. It's just not going to go. And it's okay. You'll be all right. You know?
To me, I focus so much more on my fitness, not necessarily how I eat, but definitely on working out during the pandemic, because I felt like all my excuses were taken away.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing of, like, well, you don't have time. I got to catch a plane. I got to...
Yeah.
It was all gone, and so I was like, I'm here. It's nice out. If I don't start jogging or something, like, this is just a wasted. And I really got into it. And now I'm like, I don't want to say I'm addicted to it, but I've read somewhere more than once that, like, the endorphins that are released when you get into a good exercise pattern are the same as when you, like, fall in love.
Yeah.
It's the same exact chemicals. And also when you use cocaine, by the way.
Wow.
So people say, when people say that they're in love with exercise, they really are. Like, it's a thing. And so I'm motivated more than I ever have been, while also being like 46, and I have a realistic vibe about it. I'm not like, I'm going to get so jacked, but like, I want to look my best. I want to feel my best, and I do feel better.
Yeah.
And a ton of my like stuff has been alleviated. Like, when I lost the first 30 pounds, my snoring went away. That's gigantic for my marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was like, it was becoming a problem. Like, my wife literally, my wife was going to the other
room. It was gigantic for your friendship, by the way, with me.
Yeah, thank you. So, I don't snore in the hotel room anymore. Yeah. I'm not that guy. No, and I used to have to like lay a certain way to make it even a little bit better. Now I can sleep any way I want. I can even sleep on my back and not snore.
Wow.
So, anyway, that was big. Curry's, like, her restless leg went away. Like, there's things like that where you go, my quality of life is better. It's not just a matter of like, I look better. Yeah. It's like, you really do, you know, I'm going to be like, I just, obviously, you start getting my age, you think about medical stuff, and like, I want to live longer. I have a lot of early death in my family, so I'm just like, I'm just trying to, you know, let's mitigate some of this stuff. Yeah. So that's been good, but the BMI thing, you just have to let go sometimes. Like you said, you gotta know what fits your life.
Yep.
I feel like for me, like you said, if you're doing insanity every day, if you're going to do, it's almost like there's a 10-pound range. I'm in a range now where I've maintained my weight for over 6 months, which I've never been able to do my whole life. My adult life, I've never done that. So this is a huge victory for me, just maintaining.
That's awesome.
And it's because I'm exercising every day. But if I wanted to be like 205 or 204 and have the BMI, that's a full-time job now.
Yep.
That's a quit the comedy career, get a personal trainer, eat tuna out of a bag, one of those tuna bag people where they just tear open the Starkist and eat it with a fork from the bag. That's the guy I become. I'm just not. I'm not willing.
Yeah, there's
to do
a quality of life that goes away then for me. Yeah. I've done it. Mm-hmm. There have been times I really I'm gonna see
there's it. A season to do it just to see like what you're capable of. Like if I'm I've signed up for races and stuff to see like could I challenge myself? Yeah. Could I do a half marathon? But like then the season passes and you're like,
whew. Well, you know, we talk about there's seasons to fast and there's seasons to feast. I mean that in a biblical way, but also in just a lifestyle way, meaning. There's always a good time. Even your doctor says that for you. I don't mean like literal necessarily you don't eat, but that you do something different for that time. You don't have to call it a diet, but that you, hey, I'm going to take the next 4 weeks and do X.
Yeah.
That could be really good for you in all ways. It's like a reset, you know, but you can't live. Some people do. To me, I don't find that healthy to live there because what will happen is if I try to live there, then when I just have a bad day or normal day, then I end up once I'm off a wagon, I'm the kind of guy that derail. Go, ooh, everybody, let's go, you know, let's go start a bonfire and see how many bonbons we can eat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've mixed
bonfire,
a few metaphors.
Bonfires. Why would you bring bonbons to a bonfire? I don't understand.
Like burning the wagon.
Are you melting
a bonfire?
Are you putting the bonbons on a stick and hanging them over the fire as they drizzle into the, that's the worst way to eat a bonbon I've ever heard of. Hey, I remember when I was a kid, we used to go down, we'd make a big bonfire. We'd all eat bonbons. I think I was in a cult.
Guys, colloquialism. Anyway.
And you want to be my ghostwriter? I don't think so.
Yeah, the good news is I get to edit things when I write them. Not when I'm speaking.
If you check out my new book from Pendant Publishing, Bonfires, Bonbons, and Bon Appetit. It's very alliterative.
Oh, wow, that's good. But, you know, the deal is, though, it's better for me just to have, like, a balance, like a, hey, today is what it is, you know, let today be what it is. I think that's good. I think that's the
road to compromise, John, and I think you've just instructed our listeners how to let themselves off the hook and not pursue a holy life.
No, I'm telling you, man, like, I want to do a series maybe early this next year on digital health.
Yeah.
Like, I got a friend I met that... through a book I'd written, he reached out and I kind of did some, just gave him a little advice on some things he was doing. But he has a whole, his whole like life, he does a lot of corporate events talking about digital health, like actual ways online or with your devices, like what it's doing with anxiety. Like you literally pick up your phone as I said that. And then your iWatch.
No, I was just looking at, I was looking at the clock though. So that's all I was doing. You're saying I'm unhealthy for them?
Johnny, I think we know.
I just knew that you were probably going to be talking for a long time. I was I got a second here.
I was like, you know why I called you here.
You had that glazed over look in your eyes like, this is going to be a minute.
This is going to be, no.
No, okay, go ahead. I understand. Digital health.
No, but I'm saying, I think we're scared of it.
Right. No,
think,
for sure.
I think we're scared to talk about it because it is like the idea of taking it away at all.
Right. We're addicted. We're totally addicted.
So we'll tell our kids, we'll put a timer on their phones, but we don't want to put a timer on our phones.
Yeah. And I wonder if people have done the whole thing of like where you have the, you can limit, because everybody has that setting in your iPhone now where you can limit your use of the apps.
Screen time, yeah.
But then you can go change the limit.
Right.
You have the ability to go in and say, you know what? I need 6 hours on Facebook today. Yeah. Sorry, phone.
Listen, I made a mistake and I told you when I first sat down at lunch today. Like, number one, I took all social media off of my home screen.
Yeah.
Really, really helps. I don't see the little bubbles that tell me.
So, wait a minute. You still can scroll through one page over and get to them?
But my home screen, I recognized my own pattern was this. When I go to my home screen, it's the screen, only screen I'm on usually. Okay. Wherever there's a notification, I automatically hit it.
Okay.
So, like, if I see mail has a little... I need to check my email. If I see text message, I have a text message. And then if I saw Twitter had a one... So
you
I end
check
up,
it.
I instinctively do that. So I removed it from my, I don't see now.
So do you see yourself taking it completely off the phone though?
I see myself some days taking myself completely off of it.
Yeah.
Like if, and I'm
it's
sure,
getting pretty toxic.
I'm sure,
sure
if you follow me, you notice I'm not posting and now I'm writing about things that matter to me like crazy just because
So you want people to go buy your thoughts. You don't need them on a free Twitter platform.
I will yet again say you can put out great messages on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
You cannot have a great conversation.
No.
And so about anything that matters of substance.
Sure.
So if you're talking about things of substance and you're hoping to have meaningful conversations, we can officially say the experiment has not worked.
Mm-hmm.
You can encourage... If you're going to be the encouraging guy, I'm all for it. Go for it.
Well, even Twitter in this inception was what was called a microblogging site. It wasn't meant for conversations.
Part one of 16 is not how they made Twitter, and that's what we have to do now to say anything of substance.
Yeah, and you're going to be interrupted by people who are uneducated. It's like what was the guy who wrote The Death of Expertise, Tom Nichols?
Uh-huh.
He talks about that, the idea that it's the loudest voice, not necessarily the most educated voice, that sometimes wins the day on social media, and that's a real shame.
Yep. Just because 100,000 people retweeted your thing should not bring you comfort necessarily.
I've never had it happen, so if it happens to me, I'll be the outlier that it did matter, and it was a great thing.
It is a possibility that the wrong mob is supporting you.
Yeah, well, that'd be a bummer, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and that's like a...
The Wrong Mob is a book title, by the way.
Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to want me to write.
Yeah, could you please?
You're like, could you... Listen, I'm telling you, we need a Johnny W.
Don't you think?
Book with John Driver. Or...
What if I chose another Ghost Rider? Wouldn't you be just devastated? I found a guy. He was backstage in one of the shows, and he said he writes.
Turns out he writes books. And I was like, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. I never thought of it before.
Actually, I would see why you might go with somebody else.
Oh, because you're a little too close.
Yeah. Although I think that'd make me a better writer for you. Because the more I know you, that's the whole idea, is I have to get inside your head and write in your voice. So, look, all you would need if I was your writer,
okay,
what you really need me for someone like
$48,000 down.
What's it going to cost me to get into this book? What you would need for me, and this is what I do for a lot of people, yeah. So a lot of people are already writers. What I serve as is the project manager for them. Mm. So what I say is, hey,
give me
dude,
some deadlines.
I need 5,000 words by next Friday.
Yeah.
I say, hey, I need you to just write like little bullets of your 30 favorite stories. So you would say, oh, the one in Jacksonville, like, you know what it is. You're not right. And then when we have interview, then you talk out that story. I record it and I write it for you in your own words.
Oh, okay.
And I make it, well, right. Except I make it better. So
let's give it a shot. I don't know.
So then all you got to do is we're going to write 30 bullets. You know what I'm saying? And just think. All you got to do is think, and then you can just be yourself, and then you can just talk, and then I'll bring you stuff, and then you
edit. Can we call him something else? You know I'm not a gun guy.
Don't you write?
I'm kidding.
30 arrows. 30 golf
in my
clubs.
Quiver.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, dude, we should write something.
Let's do it.
We should write.
I'm going to go off Twitter and spend this next year just deep dive into me.
It won't take a year. We can
to Lake Johnny.
Lake Johnny. What do you think if... here's the question. If we were to write a book together, could you write a book that wasn't funny, that was clever, but not necessarily like trying to make everybody... Like, could you write a book about the serious stuff we talk about?
Maybe. I mean, it would have to be bookended with...
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think that I... Because I would... It's like what Allison said about her podcast, where she wanted to make something she didn't see in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I would probably, it's one of the reasons I've probably not done one yet, because I'm like, well, this is probably an idea that's already been seen, it's been done. But yeah, so I would want to tell stories that I think people would be interested in, which means I would try to lead with something funny, but it would have some meaning behind it or some heart behind it.
You know, I wrote one like that. I didn't finish. I wrote a proposal, and it got rejected. It was recent.
Stinks when you get your proposals rejected, doesn't it?
I told somebody today, because I'm always usually helping somebody walk through a process, even if I'm not doing it with them, you know?
Yeah.
And a guy's going to a writer's conference, and he's going to meet some agents and stuff. And I'm kind of helping out with some proposal stuff. And I said, I just want to remind you, when I started writing, I got about one yes to every 100 no's.
Mm.
I said, now that I'm quote unquote a professional writer, I still get about one yes for every 20 no's.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, I was like, so just know, don't feel bad about no's. I mean, like, that's just life.
Right.
If you're going to do this, you just got to be okay with that, you know? But I wrote a proposal for, it was called, Judgment parentheses, The Good Kind.
Yeah.
And I wrote in my funny voice from the Avid Endorsement and then from the Tim Hawkins book.
Right.
I wrote in the funny voice, but I wrote serious stuff too. Mm-hmm. So I was talking about just using proverbs, like, you know, hey, here's, you know, I think I wrote about, you know, hey, your crazy uncle, I forget what I named him, you know, he just tagged you as the Antichrist on Facebook again because you got 5G. Like, you know, so I made this scenario that quite honestly is really not that far off.
No, it's not.
Of what life is like, but I made fun of it in a way like, you know, hey, this is going to be a book that's going to, we all have an uncle, whatever you call him, you know, but this one will help keep you from becoming him.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they liked it. And the two publishers told me they really liked the book and the concept, but that my platform wasn't big enough.
Right.
So,
he'll rue the day, John.
Oh my gosh.
He will rue the day.
And I agree with them.
Once you do the Johnny book and it explodes for you, you'll go back to them and be like, huge mistake. You'll be like Pretty Woman. Huge mistake.
Huge mistake.
Huge.
I want to know this. And I actually prayed about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this, but you are in a whole other world because you have to in some ways, but your work is so tied to your social media platform
and being accepted by strangers just in general.
Right.
They get to decide whether I eat or not.
That's got to be terrifying.
Not necessarily strangers on the internet, but definitely strangers in a crowd that I'm in. If they don't laugh, what I do is not monetizable anymore.
Yeah.
So it makes me an approval junkie. How do you ever break free from being an approval junkie when literally approval is what makes you worth your salt. It's what makes you what you do. Yeah, it's so strange. Yeah, it's a trip.
I told you what I think. You know, I think you're going to have to make some, all of us, by the way. Like, there are people right now through recovery that I am not seeking their approval, and I'm letting it happen.
Well, I think
let life happen.
Right.
So, meaning, like, yes, you got to do the mm-hmm. show or whatever, but it's okay if everybody doesn't. Like, if you lose that show because you did something that was more like you,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Then that'd be okay with that.
And that's the reason I'm able to keep doing it, and it doesn't like chip away at my soul, is because I still think my show looks like me.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever look up and I go, well, this is just something I said because I'm in front of people who will laugh at this,
mm-hmm.
Then I think if I have enough of that in my show, that's when you lose your soul, is when you start going, what will people like?
Yeah.
Not what do I like? And then I'll go find the people that also like it.
See,
like, so far I've been able to do those things and it's been okay. But I feel like a day is coming where there's going to be a pressure not to be 100% myself, and that's when the rubber meets the road, right?
So. Yeah. And see, that's the very similar thing to me, in that the idea that I have to go build a social media following, which I've tried when I was younger, to be the guy that posted two times a day, to be like, you know, I knew all the research, all those things, but I struggle to then write well, because it takes a lot of time to keep writing. And not just other people's books, like, you know, I'm writing sermons, or I'm, you know, doing the job at church that I have. Like, I'm doing life with people and shepherding and all those things. Like, you got to pick three, right? Something has to give, but there is that moment when the publisher's rejection comes of, wow, we liked this, you know, but your platform is small.
Yeah.
And you go, by the way, I knew that already, you know, and I agree with you. And I'm at it. There is like a freedom to it, to go, well, Jesus, you know, this is where you always talk about, you know, am I being lazy because I'm not chasing down another 1,000 followers? So, because in Christian publishing, at least, they look at that more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, that's the bummer, is just even in Christian culture at large, we pretend to be about one thing, but then we have the same gauge of success. That's a bummer.
Well, and the thing is, I'm not so sure. So even if you have a large following, it doesn't always produce sales. I mean, whatever produces sales, I'm not sure. Now,
sometimes people just have like a large following of people who are riled up because of what they are saying, but they've not figured out a way to make that into a career.
And it doesn't necessarily directly, you know, but it is, again, Laura always says, correlation is not causation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it's related, but it's not necessarily.
I think it's about providing, like, I want to be a person who's providing value for people who follow me. And I think just if I'm adding value to their life, then they'll want to be around what I'm posting more. And then sometimes that'll turn into a show, and sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll just be like, hey, I've been following you for 5 years. I've never been to a show. And I'll be like, awesome, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But yeah, if you just are always thinking of like, how can this turn into a ticket sale, or how can this turn into a booking? I think it turns you into something else than what you started out being, which is just a kid playing in the sandbox. Like, that's what we all think of ourselves as, is when we're creatives, is like that spirit of joy of making a new thing. And I think when you lose that and it becomes about like, how do I keep paying for this house I have now? The pressure of that makes you make really bad art. So I'm trying to not fall into that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, again, faith for me comes in so strong there, because at that point, I have chosen a little more to be, sounds humanistic, but I don't mean it to be. It's actually in a faith way. I'm going to be more comfortable with the life I have.
Yeah.
And not always be thinking about how I'm going to either mitigate or manipulate or translate it into something else, because I can't. You know, I remember Mark Batterson. I got to connect with him. I never forget when I was telling him, I can't, man, I'm right. He was like, just write. Everybody's, you know, make sure you're just writing. And at that point in time, when I finally connected with him, when I told him, I had written more books than him.
Yeah.
But they were all unpublished. And I remember he was so gracious to me. He was like, okay, well, your problem is not that you're not writing, then, obviously. And then he said something that stuck with me. He goes, you cannot produce opportunity.
Yeah.
It is not It is not. I mean, if in a faith world, you can't. And that's a real challenge, I think, to a lot of our mindsets. The world says produce opportunity. He's like, all you can do, though, is be prepared and ready if God chooses to bring opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you need to be faithful to be ready for that. And that's still so hard, you know, to not chase and try to produce opportunity. I think you said the other day, like, you know, some doors, if you have to kick them down.
Yeah, it's not your door.
It's not the door. You know, so, I mean, I'm getting more comfortable going, look, now I'm open. I always think like that. I'm all about community and partnerships. Like, hey, if somebody's listening here and you help build social media platforms and you want to help take content and I hire that person because it's just good stewardship to help get content to more people, but I can't be at the helm. I can be at the helm of content. I can't be at the helm of worrying about the SEO. You know, like I can't be sitting around thinking about all that all the time and also try to do the things I have to do. So I'm okay with that now. Like it may just mean, you know, if God wants that book to go, he's going to have to, you know, but I also don't want to be lazy, you know, and not, you know, so there's that weird. So yeah, hey, Johnny, do you want to run my social media platform? I think that's where we're going.
I want to be
going.
Your CEO of SEO and your mosquito warden or whatever that is, whatever that position
is. I forget
is.
What he was. Mosquito? I have to go.
Mosquito.
There's only one way to find out. I've got to go back to Anna Maria Island. So, and even though the election's over.
It's going
to
be a while.
I just wanted to see his acceptance speech. Like CNN's like, oh, wait, we're going live right now. Anna Maria Island.
He won't concede. They're saying he won't concede. That's great.
I will not stop until every legal mosquito has been counted. Anyway, yeah, wow, that's funny. So
We waited till the end.
Hey, guys, we kept it today.
That's great.
A little lighter. We know that life is still heavy, but we kept it a little lighter for you today. We did not talk about a lot of history or electoral college or any of that. So hopefully you had just a moment.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome.
Loyal listeners.
Make sure you head over to our website, though, is talkaboutthatpodcast.com. It's a .com, Johnny. We don't have any of those .edu's
no,
or
don't.
.govs or
orgs. We couldn't get a .gov, John. We're not in the government agency.
We are the government's podcast. So make sure you check that out and share and leave a review. And if you want to run my social media, give me a call.
Give us a shout.
Yeah.
If you want to chip in a few bucks, patreon.com.
Yep.
Linked from our podcast page, right?
Yep, I think. From our website, yeah.
Share it. It helps with the algorithm. It helps people find us. They've never listened to the show. We're always trying to grow the audience. You guys are very faithful, and it's great that you listen, and we're just trying to get it to all the people that we can so that it's not just us wasting our time here, guys, because as you can tell, we got a lot going on. I don't have anything going on. But.
Well, no, and we do. We appreciate you guys, especially when you tune in every week. So we'll be back next week on
Talk About That.
Often we believe our questions mean we don't have faith, but I believe Jesus loves our questions. Our questions are windows into heaven. I'm Caden Fabrizio, and on the Questions with Caden podcast, we ask and answer one question per episode as relevantly and biblically as possible. Questions about fear, anxiety, depression, addiction, and so much more. Don't worry, your questions, they're not going to scare Jesus. So ask away. Listen and subscribe now at lifeaudio.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.